Cabinet met today. Don't propose to have it meet next week because Labor Day takes the usual Monday, but we'll meet again prior to the election, probably the Tuesday of the last week before the election. That's because there does tend to be quite a lot of routine business. The Executive Council, for example, had 28 items before it today, regulations and various and orders and counsel of various kinds, so that business has to continue to be processed. Obviously, the agendas aren't full of a lot of policy decisions and bills for introduction. We're not at that phase in the cycle. But there are things we have to process, regulations made pursuant to earlier policy decisions and legislation, fiscally neutral transfers within and between departments, and any urgent matters. So today, as well as a very large pile of regulations, we finalised and have ready to sign a shared memories arrangement with Belgium. This is the third of these which we've entered into. The first one was with France, which generated the idea around shared memories agreements being formalised with countries who had fought alongside France in previous world wars. That was signed in 2004. Then last year, when I went to the Battle of Passchendaele commemoration, it was hoped to be able to sign these arrangements with both the regional government of Flanders and the government of Belgium. Unfortunately, there wasn't a government of Belgium at the time, so that went on hold, but it has now been able to be revived, and we'll be able to have that signed shortly by the ambassador. We've also completed the negotiations on a working holiday agreement with Peru. That will be ready for signature at the APEC summit in November. We're processing ongoing decisions around various stages of negotiations on treaty settlements across a range of issues and iwi. We've reached agreement on a status of forces agreement with Germany. That will be useful with NZDF personnel due to be in Germany in the not so distant future for NH90 training, new helicopters. We've also today approved the outcome for us of the ASEAN FTA negotiations. That now needs to go through a process to get it ready for signature. That would be hoped to be achieved at the time of the East Asia Summit, right close to the end of this year. And at the time of signature, the national interest analysis would then be tabled in Parliament. And we've also given further guidance to trade, customs and commerce officials on the next stage of international negotiations for a new anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. Reports back to the Cabinet. We do get reports on where the enrolment figures are at compared with the same time prior to the last election. So as of Wednesday, 15 October, 93.63% of those estimated to be eligible to enrol had enrolled. That's about half a percentage point down on the equivalent period before the prior election, so obviously still work for the enrolment authorities to do. I've also got a statement ready for circulation on allocation of New Zealand aid money to places in severe trauma, which includes Iraq, the Sudan, and the occupied Palestinian territories and Somalia. That's under my acting foreign minister hat and out of the NZAID baselines. Coming up this week, I understand Michael Cullen's releasing the latest six-monthly evaluation of KiwiSaver, a roaring success in terms of who signs up, and I understand growing evidence that it is particularly attractive to people on lower and modest incomes who haven't necessarily had the chance to save before in an employer-subsidised scheme. In terms of official figures out this week, which are of particular interest, there is the CPI September quarter from Stats due out tomorrow. Also Wednesday, the external migration figures from statistics, figures for September. The Reserve Bank obviously has its announcement, six-weekly review, the level of the official cash rate coming up on Thursday. Apart from that, it's a campaign trail. I'm in Auckland tomorrow, in Taupo on Wednesday, Auckland on Thursday, Rotorua on Friday, Gisborne on Saturday, the Mid-North on Sunday, and whether Labor Day brings any respite remains to be seen. Any questions?
Can you make a John Key's comments that a Labor-Green government would be a no-growth economy?
Labor's very focused on growth in the economy, and I would like to say a few words about that, because I think in terms of addressing the fallout from the international financial crisis, the first step you take is to stabilise your financial sector, but then you must turn to the issues which are going to put your economy in a good position to resume growth when international conditions permit that. Yesterday in the speech I gave in Wellington, I set out the international context that we have to take into account in all our planning now. I referred to the dismal prospects for growth which the International Monetary Fund has forecast for developed economies, which include a number of our most significant trading partners, obviously, across Australia, the US, the whole Eurozone and Japan. So there is a slowdown. We're not immune to it. Prices in areas like milk products, which have been very buoyant, are well off their peak at this point. Tourism, our second biggest export dollar earner, is very sensitive to movements, even small movements in global growth. So we have to anticipate that 2009 is going to be not a fast year. It's going to be a relatively slow year as well. And that's why my total focus now is on looking ahead to what kinds of decisions would need to be taken, and I've said within 40 days, on a December economic stimulus package. I've indicated the kinds of areas of investment which could be brought forward, things that would be done in the normal course of events, but could be brought forward to ensure that there's not a take-off in unemployment as a result of the fallout from the international financial crisis. I've also made it clear that I and the Labor Party do not intend to make any further significant new spending announcements. Those we have made are very much focused on education, training, retraining, home ownership as also a way of stimulating housing market activity and supporting beneficiaries to increase their income, because we do not have the revenue to address base benefit issues. So that's very much my focus now. What is going to be needed to support our economy as we move through this phase? As I say, step one is to address the issues of stability in the finance sector. Step two, which we're very much working on the possibilities for now, is how to inject some momentum into the non-financial economy.
I think the argument from your opponent is that a Labor-led government with a multi-party government policy brings New Zealand first prosperity may be hamstrung to actually act decisively in economic crisis.
Nothing is more frightening to the Kiwi public than the prospect of Roger Douglas and ACT being anywhere near the driving seat. And that is something which I think people will be weighing up as we move through this period. The issue here is about what leadership team is best equipped to take New Zealand through a very difficult period. Is it the team which has shown that it can balance economic and social policy in a way which is inclusive, looks after the most vulnerable in society, and is capable of getting very good growth? What we're seeing from the National ACT side of politics is policies which I described yesterday as both short-sighted and sinister. And I have no doubt that just as in the past people on the right have used economic crisis and downturn as an excuse to trot out the policies of further deregulation of the labour market, slashing public spending and privatisation. So that would be the agenda that any National Act combination would roul out.
Prime Minister, I think you see that as supplementary poll questions. Are you concerned that at this stage John Key seems to have hedged over you in terms of having the best effort to deal with the economy in the
moment? Absolutely not. That poll, as you know, is rather more skewed than many. But I'm absolutely confident that at times like this, people focus on who has the team with the experience, the track record, and the judgment. And we're certainly getting a lot of feedback that this is not a time to be changing horses midstream.
In the course of events today, John Key has made the statement that he doesn't believe you understand the economy and the banking system. How do you respond to those sort of statements?
Well, bipartisanship seems to have been something for Sunday afternoon, and then transmissions as normal resumed. I have to say that I have full confidence in the Minister of Finance, the Governor of the Reserve Bank and senior officials there, and in John Whitehead and the team at the Treasury. I believe we're getting good advice. Michael Cullen is sharing that advice with Bill English. I understand that Bill English is comfortable with the level of care, deliberation, and the pace at which these issues are being addressed, and perhaps it's time his leader began to listen to him.
I think that John Key, though, has something to offer here as a guy who's spent a long time in this field of international finance. Do you think that he has something to offer on this?
I'm absolutely confident that I, as Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance, are getting good advice from the most senior government officials and the Reserve Bank on what needs to be done to ensure stability of the financial sector. What we must then do is take the next steps that I've been talking about, which is about an economic stimulus plan which is going to see New Zealand able to continue to invest and build for when international trading conditions enable us to get some growth back into the economy. It's not just about financial sector stability. It's now about dealing with the effects of the financial crisis internationally on the real economy. And that's where I believe the plan that we are outlining, the kinds of things we are prepared to do and announce in a December package, are so important.
Shouldn't voters know that before they go to the polling
booth
rather than
wait until
afterwards?
Voters have it very clear from me and from Dr. Cullen that we are now looking at what kind of expenditure can be brought forward. We've been very clear about the kinds of areas which could be covered, whether it's transport infrastructure, some of the essential works in local government, which our government has a track record of supporting, could be retrofitting, could be bringing forward some housing corporation developments and redevelopments, making sites available for home ownership for modest income families on such land, could be afforestation. There's a range of options there, and with a new mandate, we would be in a position to move to finalise those. Our total focus is on how to ensure that the fallout from the international financial crisis doesn't hurt vulnerable people here, and to start that rebuilding through these kinds of investments and through the education and skills announcements we're making to get us back on a growth track.
Many other nations, Prime Minister, see some urgency in some form of wholesale lending insurance scheme. Why do you not see the same urgency here in a more measured or slower response?
It's important that these issues are analysed extremely carefully. I'm confident that they are being analysed extremely carefully. I repeat again, I have confidence in the Reserve Bank and in Treasury, giving both me and the Minister of Finance timely advice, and I'm advised that Bill English has been very comfortable with the pace, the care, and the deliberation going into this.
Have you felt the need to go and talk to the bank chief executive in the same way Mr. Key said
that? Most certainly not. I'm the Prime Minister. I'm the leader. I'm not the Minister of Finance. There is a distinction in roles.
Bill English has said to Graham Ashburton today that, that Labour has done some good things over the years, and he's that Kiwi saver, that it's run out of puff it does mean the urgency to push ahead is too focused on attacking JobKeeper. What do you make of that?
Well, obviously there's no foundation for that because Labor has set out big and ambitious plans for the future around how to invest in growth and development. I spoke at the launch speech about the six big areas which we're pursuing to get long-term economic growth, and they, of course, ranged across education, skills, investment, which we're given a high priority to, innovation, which the National Party would try to pull the rug on with the elimination of the R&D tax credits and the Fast Forward Fund, which is a collaboration with industry. Obviously, the priority we're giving to exporting and trade agreements, and you've just heard me talk about the successful completion of another agreement with half a billion people community in ASEAN. The sustainability issues we've worked on because we believe that brings premium value to the economy. Infrastructure, of course, we've done a tremendous amount on and have plans to bring forward more at this time. And then there's the huge area of savings, where we have provided for the first time in a generation or two a scheme which Kiwis have taken to, like ducks to water, and which the national policy simply wrecks for a short-term payment of tax cuts to the upper income groups disproportionately. So to say that the National Party has any kind of plan or program which remotely resembles the comprehensive program across economic, social and other areas which Labor has is fanciful.
The Greens today said that they would
there's no problem with that from Labor's point of view, and was not last time. So the issue becomes each of us going out to maximise our vote to see how well we're going to do. After the election, you look at what the various possible components of a governing arrangement can be. I've put together governments after three elections. Each time, those configurations have been different because the voters decide who comes to this place and in what numbers.
What did you do with action for the Greens announcement?
It wouldn't be unexpected because the Greens have been very clear about what their policy priorities are. Peace and disarmament, social and economic justice, conservation, areas that we've worked very closely with them on.
Can I ask whether between now and the election we're going to see a bit more detail of the economic stimulus package?
You'll hear us talking very much about the areas we want to bring forward, realistically, government officials now are obviously focused on what advice they'll be giving to the government after the election. They prepare briefing papers. They have heard very loud and clearly that Labor certainly intends to bring in an economic stimulus package. I imagine with government departments they'll be preparing for the range of possibilities post-election, and we would certainly expect to see some quite detailed work available at that point.
When you look at the speech you gave yesterday, were you preparing the country to expect things to get actually a lot uglier than in my opinion?
I talked yesterday about the IMF's global growth forecasts, which are down about 25% on where they were 3 months ago. I talked about the forecast they're making for our big trading partners, Australia 2.2, United States 0.1%, Eurozone 0.2%, Japan 0.3%, and so on. And there is a feeling that the risks are on the downside there. So we have to plan in the context of that reality, and that's why the thinking we are doing around an economic stimulus package is so important.
So what were the announcements, the big spending announcements you had to ditch?
I would like to have had more to announce by way of new initiatives in primary health care, obviously paid parental leave, even setting a target figure for the minimum wage that would be above maintaining it at the present level. but we have judged it not prudent at this time to make those sorts of commitments. Our total focus now must be on the economic stimulus package and on what will contribute to growth picking up again in New Zealand. That's the responsible thing to do.
Haven't been briefed yesterday on the Bush Summit Initiative.
I understand that came out overnight our time the previous night. Yes, I have some more information about it. There seem to be a range of summits being proposed, and clearly it's in New Zealand's interest to be represented in some way at those summits. It very much depend where the government formation process is at. Obviously, APEC will be a very important summit this year. That's 19th to 23rd November. The international economic situation will be at the forefront there. The East Asia Summit in December will be important as well, but President Bush's proposed summit, other summits, will be important. I see that the Finance Minister of Japan is proposing that Australia and New Zealand should be involved in summits where the G8 has outreach. So I think we need to look to take whatever opportunities come up for us to be present at those summits. And some of us have had a lot of experience of summits. Myself at many leadership summits, Michael Cullen at many IMF World Bank meetings, and I personally think Michael has a lot to offer in thinking about how international financial institutions could be reshaped.
Maurice Williamson's been on the radio line talking about tolls again, talking about $3 each way. What sort of tolls does Labor cut?
Well, Maurice is now saying that $30 a week in tolls is fine, rather than his previous 50, but I guess $30 a week in tolls is twice what they promised the worker on the average wage without children by way of a tax cut, and five times what they promised the worker on the average wage with children by way of a tax cut. So it very much looks like a case of giveth with one hand and taketh away with the other. We haven't really come to a clear conclusion on what's acceptable, but I think most people have in their minds that you pass a booth and chuck in a coin or two, but really our focus isn't on toll roads, our focus is on what investment now we can get into our infrastructure overall by way of supporting the economy.
Will you be going to Peru even if the final results won't actually be in?
Oh, look, it's not possible till we see the outcome of a general election to say at what level and how New Zealand can be represented at APEC. Obviously, the 19th is only 11 days after the New Zealand election.
Just going back to the bank deposit insurance issue, are you suggesting that it wasn't appropriate for the Leader of the Opposition to talk directly to the bank executives?
Well, that's a matter for him, but in my position as Prime Minister, I have complete faith in the Minister of Finance. I have complete faith in the Governor of the Reserve Bank and the Head of Treasury and their senior officials to be advising us on what it is prudent and responsible for New Zealand to do. I won't be picking up the phone to banks.
From a thought made by the comments of John Shaw today that GST could rise to 15% and the after tax rate could rise as well?
I can't see any basis for those comments at all. Certainly not part of our plans.
Prime Minister, have you had any indications, further indications of any lasting damage to New Zealand and to Fonterra as a result of the Sanlu business in China?
No. Indeed, for New Zealand, I think our reputation is enhanced because once it came to the attention of me and ministers, we said it was our duty to inform the Chinese government. And I think we've been respected for that. We did not shrink from having the truth told, despite the fact that our biggest export earner is a joint venture partner.
Can I ask you just a small technical matter? If you're not reinstating Winston Peters, why are you still acting Foreign Affairs Minister?
Because I don't propose to make any change to the situation which I announced at the end of August. It's simply too close to the election. There are other inquiries still ongoing around the finances of that particular party, and I'm perfectly happy to shoulder the burden of being acting foreign minister, acting racing minister, and acting associate minister of senior citizens in charge of the gold card. Thank you.